when he had the idea for the book, when was that? Was there like a sort of like a light bulb moment when you decided, I need to write a book about this? Was there one particular moment?
As my career was sort of winding down, I'd thought about it and I thought I'd had a few stories and a few experiences that could that would be interesting. But it was one of those things where I thought I was going to talk about it, it was never going to happen. And then as I stopped playing, I then started working as a teacher and I found it really hard. And I found it a really good process to start writing about my experiences, and that sort of helped me out of the problems I was having as a teacher. So that's when it really sort of took hold. I started writing about how I was feeling at the time of teaching, then reminiscing on my career, and it sort of went from there. Once I'd written sort of 15 or 20,000 words, I thought, I've got to finish this through now. And then I didn't really write it to be published. You know, I just wrote it because I thought there was a story to be told. And as it went, I thought, actually, it's quite good. And then I decided to go down the route of trying to get it published. And now we're where we are.
I mean, was it like a sort of therapeutic process, really, to sort of put your emotions down there? Because it's quite an emotional book, isn't it? And you talk about lots of highs, you talk about lots of lows as well. Was it quite good for you personally to have done that as your career was coming to an end?
Yeah, it was brilliant at that time. The only problem is, when I was talking about the really positive stuff, that was great. So that'd lift my mood and put me in a good mood. But when you talked about the not so good stuff, it brought back some bad memories as well. But it was definitely, yeah, it was a real sort of cathartic process. And at the time in my life then, after just stopping playing and sort of going through a bit of a transitional period, is what I needed really to remind myself of I wasn't just a struggling teacher, I'd actually been relatively successful in the past.
Yeah, and you were successful in those times. You wrote it all yourself, which you must be immensely proud of.
Yeah, I mean, everyone seems not surprised, but expected me to have a ghostwriter or something like that, but I've always been relatively intelligent and always liked writing and reading and been interested in that sort of stuff. So I found it relatively easy. I had a friend of mine help me with the editing and bits and bobs like that. But I mean, I wrote everything. He would just look at the spelling, punctuation, grammar really more than anything, and maybe say, why don't you elaborate on this bit or leave this bit out. But other than that, I wrote it all myself, yeah.
The actual content of the book, you talk about lots of different things. It is called Journeyman. So that is reflecting, I suppose, on, you know, the type of career that you had. When you look back on it now, do you sit there and is there a lot of regret in there? Because that's what sometimes comes across in the book, that you were immensely talented, especially when you were younger and you were at some big clubs like Arsenal. Was it a sense of regret that you look back on it now?
There's two halves of my career. The second half, from sort of 23 onwards, I've got no problem with that at all. I felt I was dedicated, I really did my best. But the first half, I still look back at it now and cringe at the way I behaved at times and just got a bit carried away. And the problem was not that I was doing anything that was really terrible, but I was just living my life as a normal 17, 18, 19-year-old, which is fine if you're a 17, 18, 19-year-old who goes to college. But if you're trying to be a professional sportsman, the lifestyle that I had at that time was inappropriate, and that's partly down to my lack of education and stuff like that. But I think, especially as a teenage boy and a young man, you need to learn for yourself. You know, people would tell me at the time, you know, maybe you should behave a bit better, maybe you should do this and that. But until the penny dropped for me, I didn't really take a great deal of notice. But I got to sort of 22, 23, been released from a few places, and I realised that if I don't sort myself out now and start really knuckle down, then I'm going to waste a lot of the talent that I had.
But is that something about how football was in those days that's maybe changed? I know you haven't, you know, you're not old, but you know, that was what it was like. That whole kind of football mentality was a little bit different then, maybe?
Oh yeah, the culture was definitely different.
You were out on it, you know.
Well, there was only, if you was at a team building exercise, there's only one thing you did. That was going out as a team, drinking and enjoying yourself. There's no alternative way. If someone said, let's go temping bowling, everyone would have been like, oh, what do you want to do that for? You know, that was the way it was. And even when I was growing up at Arsenal, you would be around the first team players quite a bit, not all the time, but you'd hear stuff that they'd get up to, and you'd think, so they're seasoned professionals playing in the Premier League, and you'd hear about they're going out on a Tuesday night, and you'd hear about what they got up to. So yeah, it was just the normal. But unfortunately for me, I think it can be normal if you're playing regularly in the first team performing, then that's not really an issue. It wasn't back then, whereas I was a young player trying to learn my trade, but behaving like someone who was a first team player.
Yeah,
which was great for my relationship with the first team players. Got on really well with them socially.
Yeah,
but from a professional perspective, it didn't allow me to get to to where I felt I should have got.
Mm. And then you made the decision to go to non-league. I mean, how difficult a decision was that? There's one point in the book where you talk about how quickly football can change. One minute you might be away at Morecambe on a Tuesday night or whatever, the next day you're live on ITV, you know, FA Cup coverage in the third round or whatever it is, you know, and you're right in the spotlight with millions of people watching you at home.
Yeah, well, I mean, the important thing for me was dropping down to non-league from Reading was I need to play first-team football, and I played in the reserves at Reading quite a bit, done okay when I'd looked after myself, when I'd been misbehaving, probably not so well, but I realised I need to play football, and going to Yeovil was probably the best thing I did because I had 3.5 years there of playing first-team football. Now, you can play in the reserves all you like, but first-team managers want to see players that have played at a first-team level. That might be in the Conference, might be in the Conference South. So it's the best thing I really did. I had 3.5 years there, played 150 games. By the time I was 22, I played 150 games. Now, there's not that many young players now that probably do that. So that was invaluable experience. I think if I hadn't done that, I probably wouldn't have gone on to sort of build my career back up and do, you know, okay without being spectacular.
Earlier, you mentioned about your second half of your season. Crawley, I mean, you were part of an amazing story. This club that came sort of out of nowhere had its detractors.
Yeah.
But you were, and the man at the helm had his detractors as well. What did it feel like having a part of you? Are you immensely proud of that period of your career? Or I know promotion, in the book you say the promotion was actually more of a highlight than the FA Cup trip to Old Trafford.
Well, it's strange because I've left Hereford. I was really happy at Hereford. Would love to have stayed there, but for whatever reason, we couldn't. So I was looking for a club like many players were over the summer, and I spoke to a few, and I spoke to Crawley and Steve, and at that time I was living in the Midlands, so it was at a stage of my career, I was 30, and I was thinking about trying to get some roots and getting back to Essex where we're based, so this come up. And if I'm being brutally honest, I went to Crawley because it was another year's contract. You know, I didn't have massive aspirations of us getting promoted or anything like that. And our first season at Crawley, we did pretty well for the club. I think we finished 7th or 8th, which is our highest finish. And then over that summer, everything changed because they become real, real big investment in the club. We signed some really good players for the level. So from my perspective, I just got carried on the wave because if I was out of contract, I wouldn't have been offered a new contract, I don't think, because Steve was going on a spending spree and buying lots of really good players for the level. So I was lucky enough to catch on that wave, but I felt like that the way I played was the more better players I had around me, the better I played, because I was more of a technical player than an athletic. So it was brilliant for me because we were signing people like Matt Tubbs, Sergio, who I felt were really on my wavelength. And after a sticky start to the season, you know, I managed to play a lot of games and really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was brilliant because it was so unexpected, I think, more than anything.
Was it a bit ironic that you were playing for somebody who ultimately didn't always want to play the pretty football, but you were, as you said, a technical player. You weren't necessarily maybe an athletic Josh Simpson or maybe even Sergio or something like that, but you were a ball player.
Yeah.
And actually, Steve wasn't always a massive fan of that kind of football.
Not always, but Steve always likes to have one or two ball players in his team.
Right.
And Steve would be astute in that he'd pick not always the best players, he would pick the best team. So he knew that you couldn't have four players like me in midfield. But if you had people like Sergio and Josh and Danny Bullman who worked really, really hard to win the ball back, probably a bit harder than me, then that was great because then they could give someone to like me who could hopefully create stuff. There'd be many a time when I'd look in midfield and I'd be on the halfway line looking back at them three thinking, blimey, they're working hard. But they had different skills that they brought to the team from me. And after initial settling down period in that promotion season, I think Steve realised that we needed to have a different styles of midfielders to complement each other, and that's what seemed to happen in that season.
I mean, you talk about a lot of the rants in the dressing room. You don't give away too many secrets, but there's a few interesting insights. Did you tire of all that? I mean, you intimate that, you know, sometimes you thought, was he actually a bit of a genius, or was he actually a bit of a bully? Even in the book, it seems like you're not even 100% sure yourself.
I think there's a bit of both to it. To be honest, sometimes it's really harsh. Other times it's more calculated. And the more I get into coaching and the more I get into management, I look back and think, yeah, there's probably a reason why he did that. I don't always agree with what he did. And a lot of the time he would go mad at half-time and there wouldn't be much sense. But every now and then there would be. So if you got to the stage where you could ignore the anger and the frustration, because a lot of the time Steve would just be angry and frustrated and listen to the actual, what the 10% of it that was really meaningful, then you you got a lot out of it. And the one thing I'd always say about Steve is he never held any grudges. Mm. We'd have rants after games or at half time, but on the Monday it'd be back to normal. But he's just got a relentless will to win. He just wants to win football matches all the time, and however you do that, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
And he's had great success. You know, over the last 4 or 5 years, I would say he's arguably, well, probably is the most successful manager in English football.
Yeah.
But there's many ways of doing stuff, and Steve is one way of doing it, and other people had others. But I just felt at the end that I wasn't maybe going to get the... that I wasn't always going to get the respect I deserved off him.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, obviously, your time there, his time there, will often be crystallised in that one day at Old Trafford. Mm. Did it flash past you that day? Were you able to soak it up? Were you able... I know people say, can you ever enjoy those sorts of things? But you were still in the game late on. So, actually, it was about the football as well as the occasion.
Yeah, it was one of those surreal experiences where I still look back at it now and wonder if it really happened. But, you know, before everyone's going, oh, you've got to enjoy this. And I'm like, yeah, of course I want to enjoy it, but I don't want to lose 7 or 8 nil because I don't care who you are or who you're playing against. If you're a professional sportsman, it's embarrassing. And we were playing on ITV in front of X amount of people. So it's one of those things that you can reflect back on and probably appreciate it more afterwards. Because at the time, I'd just be looking around thinking, what am I doing here if Michael Carrick's standing next to me or Wayne Rooney? But that's one of those, especially one of those moments where I'll always be indebted to Steve for that, because give me the opportunity to play in a game like that. Because leading up to the game, he kept his cards very close to his chest. So we would do a lot of work in training. There'll be times where I'd be in the team, times when I weren't. And I must admit, I was very concerned that it could have gone either way. The game before, we'd played Wrexham, and we were 2-0 down at half-time, got subbed at half-time, so I thought this couldn't be any worse here. But, you know, he stood by me, and I think I paid him back with the performance, not just myself, but the whole team. You know, it was one of those games where after that game, I've probably seen Steve the most emotional I've ever seen him. He was really sort of, he had a lump in his throat where he was just really proud of everyone and what we'd done, which was obviously amazing for a conference team to go to Old Trafford and get, you know, be competitive the whole game and being close to nicking a draw in the end.
I mean, I'm sure you went out and celebrated that day despite the defeat, but that togetherness you had as a squad, that comes from, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but you do have to occasionally let off a bit of steam, and I know the episode with the naked bus on the way home is probably one that, you know, some of the readers will probably enjoy when they get stuck into it. But is that element you have to have that? I mean, you're sort of coaching now, it's under 16s, under 15s, whatever, but even the 18s and 21s, is it possible to have those kind of sort of days and times as a footballer now where, you know, you have to sort of have that little moment every so often?
I'm not sure we'd encourage it with the 18s and 21s and stuff like that, but especially with the... it is a way of getting to know each other. And we at Crawley at that time had a really, really tight bond where, again, that's where I look at Steve's recruitment, and recruitment was something that he was really strong at. And it might have been a bit of luck, it might have been a lot of skill, but everyone sort of complimented each other really well in the dressing room. We had some nutcases.
Yeah.
And then we had some more sensible people, but it all seemed to work really well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there were some characters in that scene. When you look back and look at some of the other players that have now gone on, obviously, like, you know, the likes of Matt Tubbs is still playing. Sergio Sort's still playing down here in Sussex as well. What about those players that you played with? I mean, who did you really enjoy playing with the most, I suppose, and who do you now reflect on and sort of think that, you know, we had a really good thing going there?
Well, I really enjoyed playing with Matt Tubbs. I thought he was an excellent player for our level. I'd played against him for Salisbury a few times, and I thought, yeah, he looks like a good player. And then played with him, we realised how good he is, because he could do a bit of everything. Carl McFadden was a really brilliant, excellent player, and I'm pleased that he's now gone into the Championship, because for me, that's the minimum level that he should have been playing at. That was a brilliant signing. When he came in, I was like, where have we got this guy from? 60 grand from Alfred. And then he came and he was brilliant. Him and Pablo, I thought, great combination together. And from my perspective, I enjoyed playing with the people we talked about, Josh, Danny and Sergio, because I felt like we complement each other really well. So, but it was just great. When you're winning every week, it was a great place to be, great dressing room to be in. So it was thoroughly enjoyed that season.
They obviously had a disappointing season last season, being relegated. It's important they sort of, I suppose, find that sort of continuity again now, and I suppose consistency to stay there, because, you know, they don't want to fall as rapidly as they rose, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, last season would have been a disappointing season getting relegated, but I actually think if we were going to manage expectations, I think that was probably around where they was going to be. I thought they'd done really well to take to the last game of the season. If I'm being honest, when I saw what had happened at the start of last season, I was thinking if they stay up, they've had a really good year. So to just miss out, obviously it's disappointing to get relegated, but to just miss out, was probably that was where they were going to be. So I think for this season, it's important for them to just stabilise.
Yeah.
Now, people will probably say, well, we want to go back up. But I think if you can finish, after having a season of losing a lot, if you can get a bit of stability mid-table and then push on from there, then that would be a successful year, as far as I'm concerned.
Just towards the end of your playing career, you were at both Woking for a short spirit on loan, and then Aldershot, where you intimate that you didn't really enjoy that experience as well, even though it was a good club, you said. Gary Hill, someone obviously who's been quite instrumental, someone you've known sort of virtually most of your career, I suppose.
Yeah, well, played for Gary for a year at Weymouth, and then for that spell at Woking. But yeah, I really enjoyed working under him. He was one of those managers. He's not a coach, you know. He employs someone to coach. Steve Thompson's doing that now for him, and he just manages. But he manages the players, and he always knew how to manage me and get the best out of me. So he was someone I really enjoyed playing under. I was more disappointed, especially in Weymouth, when there was a difficult money situation and we had to move on. I was really happy there. Woking, when I went there, well, I was coming back from injury, weren't really fit, played for a month, average, did okay.
Could you see him taking them to the Football League?
Yeah, oh, most definitely, yeah. And he deserves that. Mm. He deserves that accolade because he was so... It's funny, Gary and Steve seem to be quite intertwined their careers, but he was so unfortunate not to go up when Boston went up due to a lot of stuff that went on there. But I mean, he deserves the opportunity to go and manage in the Football League, but I think he's only going to get that chance by taking a team there, probably. So Woking is his best opportunity. However, the problem is he's done so well there that a lot of their best players have been cherry picked, and that's going to happen most seasons. So for him to keep a team together is going to be really hard because they haven't got the financial backing, I don't think, to be able to keep people like Josh Payne, who have moved on, and Joe McInerney and people like that.
Yeah, who are very good players. Yeah. And it's not a total surprise, I suppose, that they've left. No. What about, you know, Aldershot? They're, you know, rebuilding. They've got a new manager in there, and you know it didn't work out with Dean Holdsworth when you were there. But there's more. Maybe, you know, they've got just as much potential, I suppose, as well to get back into football.
It seems a shame after the history of Aldershot and the things that have happened to him in the past. It seems horrendous that the same thing nearly happened again, and they nearly went bust. And when I went there and worked with Dean, I got on really well with Dean as a person, no problem whatsoever, but it was just, I was frustrated as a 32, 33 year old to go on loan somewhere and not play. I didn't see the point in it. I didn't see the thinking behind it. So that's what frustrated me about it. But it was a club that at that time seemed like it was really well run, and obviously what's behind the scenes maybe not, but it seemed really stable. So to see what's happened over the last few years is really disappointing. But that's another club that's got to rebuild. I mean, they've had a steady-ish season last year, and it's just a case of slow steps, because I think we all know how hard it is to get out of the conference with the size of clubs and how long it took Luton, and Bristol Rovers done really well to go straight back up, but people like Grimsby, I'm sure they didn't think they was going to be in the conference 5, 6, 7 years on. So it's really important that clubs like Aldershot just get on a secure financial footing and then sort of build from there, really.
You mentioned in the book a lot about the clubs you've been to. You also talk a lot about with the move out of football, and you tried teaching. We're here now in this wonderful complex at the training centre here in Lancing, but before that you tried teaching, it didn't work.
Yeah.
Are you glad you tried it? I know you said it just wasn't for you in the end.
Yeah, no, glad I tried it, definitely. The problem was not so much the teaching, because I mean, now as a football coach I'm teaching, it's a different style of doing it. Obviously you're out on the football pitch the majority of the time, but you're still coaching and teaching people. The problem was I got put in a situation there where I was doing teaching a lot of subjects which I didn't really know. You know, I've gone from being a footballer in May to teaching A-level economics in September and October, and that's not easy. And I taught maths and science. Well, I say taught, that's very loosely, very loose term.
But were you thinking, I need something after football? That's why you chose teaching? So you were thinking, I can't play football forever.
No, the last year or so of being at Crawley, I'd gone, and I was on my days off, I was going and doing work experience at the school. And when you're just going in work experience, it seems fine. You don't see the pressures of it, obviously, so it was quite easy. And then that last year at Crawley, when we was in League 2, I didn't really play much, went out on loan a lot. And I knew then that the end was coming. I could have probably stayed, gone somewhere else for another year or so, or 3 or 6 months, but I didn't want to be one of those players who ended up scratching around on not very much money, on short-term contracts, living away for all week and coming home at weekends. I wanted him to stop on my terms.
Yeah.
Not sure that really happened in the end, because it was sort of a mutual decision between me and football that it was time to move on. I wanted to move straight into something else, and teaching seemed the best route to do that. But you don't know until you do these sort of things, you don't know. And I don't regret it. I learned a lot about myself.
And also, it probably helps you now in your role. You're teaching kids. This is what this place is all about, isn't it? The youngsters and bringing them through the system and the academy.
What it gave me, which was brilliant, was it showed that I was good at building relationships with students, and it helped me do that even better, because I'd have a lot of naughty, especially young boys, and that were disengaged, weren't interested in the subject they were doing. So it was important for me to keep them under control. Obviously, it would have been nice to teach them as well, but so I learned about myself, and I learned that I was good at that. I felt I was good at building relationships with people, and getting people to not do what I want, but understand where I was coming from. So that was really good, and yeah, I learned a lot in that year. I learned a lot about myself and a lot about teaching and stuff. A lot of that's transferable into what I do now.
I suppose you can take a lot of the experience you've had with different managers, assistant managers, coaches, teammates, or into what you do out there on the training pitch every day.
There's loads of that. You learn from the good managers, the not so good managers, the good players. So all that sort of stuff is what's helped to mould me into the sort of coach that I'm trying to become. Because obviously what I'm doing now, I'm just learning my trade again. You know, I've gone from being a player gives you knowledge about football, but it doesn't make you a good coach. You go from, when you're a player, all you concentrate is yourself.
Yeah.
When you're coaching, you've got 11, 12, 15, 20 players you're trying to look after. So I'm very much in my apprenticeship, but this is a brilliant environment for me to be in, to learn off all the excellent coaches that are in the academy and first team and development squads and that. So it's a great place for me to be.
And also, I suppose, is it a great time to be at this football club? You know, everyone that I know, some of the supporters take a slightly dim view of the words Premier League ready, because the team isn't in the Premier League, and you know, there's a bit of frustration from some quarters. But when you look at the setup, it must be great to do the job you're doing and learning at a club that obviously, you know, has this kind of facility and potential.
There's two ways of doing of working football. I think you can invest everything, throw loads of money at the team, or you can put a lot of money in, invest in the football club and the infrastructure, and then build the team as you go. And I think that's what Brighton are doing. You know, the ground is ready for the Premier League. The training ground's ready for the Premier League. And now it's just a case of building and getting the team there. But when they get there, it'll be sustainable. Because, you know, it'll be easy to attract players to this environment. It's a beautiful place to live. We've got a brilliant manager now. So I think it's just a matter of time when that happens. Who can say? But when you think where the club was 4 or 5 years ago, I mean, I didn't have a great affinity or anything with the club there, but I played at the Wisden and know what it was like there. So for them to have been there 4 or 5 years ago and now to be here, it's a huge transformation. No doubt that's going to continue.
Because you're sort of settling, I suppose, now here, and this is a role that you're getting into. I suppose one thing that comes out, you know, of the book is that you do have to move around.
Yeah.
You know, you do have to search for the next contract. You know, as the kids come off the training pitch now, they're picking up the cones and they're taking them off now, we can see them out the window. Actually, it is going to come to a point where they will have to go on, and they might have to go out on loan to clubs, where towns and cities that they've probably never been to before. And that comes across in your book, and it probably still applies today, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. There's not many downsides to being a professional footballer. Very few, but one of them is, unfortunately, you're going to have to go where the work is. So if you live in Weymouth like I did, and then Hereford want to sign you, then you move to Hereford. If you play for Plymouth and Carlisle want to sign you, and it's the right move for you, then you go there. That's just the job. So you have to get used to that, and there's no getting away from it, really. But it's to be blessed and to be able to do something you love every day, it's a small price to pay, although it can be hard when you've got a family and that. From a playing perspective, it didn't really affect me too much, because I joined a new dressing room, make new friends within about a week or so of being there. But when you've got a partner, or not so much in my case, but if you've got young children and that, then it's probably more of a problem for them, really.
And what about the book? You know, what sort of reaction have you had to those who've read it, and friends, family, or even strangers as well? What's been the feedback that you've had in the early stages?
It's been really positive so far. You know, I thought I had a story to tell, and I thought it'd be a bit different. But yeah, all the feedback, bar none really, has been really positive, and the people like the honesty and the insight, and that's what I've tried to do. When you're, you know, when you're a a relatively nobody like I am, there's no point in being bland about it. I've got to be honest and say what I think and what it was really like, the good and the bad times. And I think people have appreciated that, and yeah, it's going really well so far, so long may it continue.
Well, it's I really enjoyed reading it. I think it's wonderfully produced. It's even got a pair of Copa Mundials on the front, which is what I used to wear, playing a lot worse football than you did. And it, just remind us, it's available in all good bookshops, but also you can get it through sort of various other ways as well.
Yeah, you can get it through Amazon, Bite Back the Publishers, you can get it through their website. It's in many Waterstones and a lot of independent bookshops and stuff like that, so it's pretty easy to get hold of. You can get it in Kindle and all those sort of versions.
What's been the reaction from your ex-teammates? Have they said much?
I've spoke to a few, no, not really. They've all been fine. Most of them don't read, do they? So they just looked at the pictures.
Well, there's some great pictures. It's lovely talking to you, and let's hope, maybe one day there might be another one to come as well.
Let's hope so. I'm not sure I've got a second one in me, though. It's like the difficult second album, isn't it? But we'll see.